A white man? No!
As a white man, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Emily.
And we're back with another Criminal Minds recap with a pretty good episode.
It was good.
I got this at first slightly confused with another very similar MO from another unsub in a different episode.
Yeah, this one had a lot of elements that we've seen mm-hmm. in other episodes.
Yeah, so I kept being like, wait, do I remember this? Or am I remembering a different episode? And
Which
then it all clicked
it
for me.
Made it seem vaguely recycled.
Uh-huh.
Because there were so many tropes that they use
multiple
times. But it holds up. It's
a
good one.
It's a good one. We are discussing Remembrance of Things Past, which originally aired October 6th, 2010.
Nice. Yeah, this one starts with a couple and their son, and they're getting ready to go to a football game, and they're like all arguing in the car really annoyingly. And the dad,
they're like giving the mom a hard time.
Yeah, the dad and the son are being total pricks to her.
Leave this woman alone.
Yeah, she's like, did you bring a jacket? And he's like, he knows how to dress for a football game.
Like he looks
this kid
like he's
is
like
11. He does not know how to dress for a football game.
No.
Middle schoolers don't know how to dress for the weather. We all know that.
Right.
She goes in to go find the tickets, and the front door is open.
Again, why is no one ever suspicious
twice in a row
of a completely ajar door?
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. She's like, ah. You guys left the door open, but I mean, they both seem like they suck, so maybe they do that.
They probably
all the time.
Did. She tries to turn on the lamp and gets like a mild shock, which is a nice touch.
There are so many things, like poltergeist things that go wrong for this woman.
They're like all the cupboards are flying.
Doors are swinging open. Like a window is open and she has to close it. She doesn't think any of it is strange.
Yeah, like.
She just, like, shrugs it off and moves along.
She's like, anyway, where are those tickets? Like, I would be like, get me out of this house immediately. So she finds the tickets and opens the door, and there's a man standing there. But it's just her husband who has come to bitch further at her about how they're going to miss kickoff.
Yeah, and she's like, taking too long.
Oh, my God. The phone rings, and the mom's like, oh, let me get that. It might be Jenny. Mm-hmm. And the dad's like, ugh, you know your daughter. She just wants to talk about a dress. And I'm like, this man
is the worst.
I hate him so much.
Yes. Like, it'll take 2 seconds. He's worried about kickoff. Like, oh my God.
And it, like, doesn't seem like, it seems like they're going to, like, a high school football game.
Right.
Not like a professional football game.
Yeah.
Because you'd be there hours in advance. It's already dark.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it is Jenny after they leave and close the door. And she leaves them a message saying that she's in trouble. And she knows that they always taught her not to be scared, but she's really scared and says that she'll probably be dead by the time they get the message and begs them to pick up the phone.
Yeah.
They're like, wow.
How? In what way would you kill that husband? I would never forgive him.
No, absolutely not. No.
Nothing he could say or do would make it better.
Nope.
Our relationship is irreparable.
It's dead.
I would never let you see our son again. And I would be plotting ways to take your life. Yeah. I really would.
Yeah.
So, yep.
Yeah. So then we cut to Rossi, who's staring at his computer, listening to a hell of a lot of construction noise.
Mm-hmm.
Hotch calls him into the office and tells him that the bodies of two young girls are found in Bristol, Virginia, tortured and electrocuted. Rossi asks if they made phone calls, and Hotch confirms that they did, but says without the signature.
Mm.
Rossi is like, I'll be in. But first, he goes to his closet and pulls out what looks like an evidence box.
Yeah, some personal files, which is not a good sign for a case. You've been carrying something around
for a long time. A closet with multiple boxes.
Yeah, there's like all. He must have just a whole slew of unsolved cases, and he's got a box for each one in the
How
closet.
How many episodes is the little like description a case resurfaces that has haunted Rossi for decades.
This is at least the second one we've seen so far, if not
Is it the third one?
It might be the third one. Because
there was the one with the clown guy.
Right, the clown guy.
There was the one with the mob hitman.
Oh, that's right.
Or maybe that was just his hometown. But still, that was a thing that's been haunting him.
Yes, it's a haunt.
And now
something
this,
from his past.
This man has had quite a past.
Yeah.
So Garcia stares sadly at JJ's empty office and then slowly slides her nameplate from the door.
Mm-hmm.
In the conference room, Morgan is texting with Ellie, who seems to be doing well.
Mm-hmm.
Says that she is wants to play soccer. She has a new friend that she's hanging out with.
And it just, they never call back to cases, so you know something is up, right?
Yeah. We learn that Jenny's body was just found, and a week earlier, a body of another girl with similar torture and electrocution wounds was found right in the same area. Both girls were forced to make a phone call prior to their deaths. So this all reminds them of The Butcher, who is a serial killer active from, I think they say 1984 to 1993.
Yeah.
So that would have been why I wasn't allowed to go anywhere as a child, because that was the time period when everybody was getting stranger danger murdered.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
No one was getting stranger danger murdered, but we thought that they were. So he abruptly stopped killing, but nobody ever caught him.
Yeah.
So Rossi comes in and says that man would be way too old to be resurfacing now, because he had profiled him as being in his late 40s back in the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And Hotch agrees that it is probably a copycat killer.
It's so weird to see Hotch presenting the case and handing the files to everyone and all the JJ stuff.
Yeah.
Seems so beneath him.
Yeah. It's just doing Charlie work.
Yeah. But it is such a gruesome crime.
It is. It's.
And they're tortured for hours before they have to make this call.
Yeah.
Just, yeah.
Yeah, so we get our first quote. Marcel Proust wrote, "Remembrance of things past is not necessarily the remembrance of things as they were," which is a good quote.
It is, and it's also the title of the episode.
It is. We learn on the plane that Jenny and Kara, the two dead girls, were both single professional women, both taken from populated areas. Jenny disappeared from a pharmacy parking lot, and Kara disappeared off of her own patio when her roommate was at home.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
Yes.
And yeah, that's when they talk about the timeline, and they say that
they're tortured a bunch beforehand, then they make the call,
and then it's five more hours before their body killed and their bodies are dumped.
Yeah, which is terrifying.
God. Yeah. Rossi says that the butcher also made everyone make phone calls, but forced them to end their calls by saying that they were enjoying it.
Mm.
And I think they say of the 20 people that he killed in that time, 20 people in 10 years, that's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people.
but he says that 13 of them got answering machines, 5 of them actually talked to someone, which is awful, and 2 never got a hold of anybody, which would be so sad if you were that person and you just want to call somebody and nobody picks up.
Uh-huh.
And not even everybody had answering machines at
that
point.
Right, that's exactly it, yeah. I don't know, I feel like talking to someone would be the worst, you know?
Actually, it would definitely be worse for the person you have to talk to.
Well, sure.
Either way, I don't know. There's no good win.
No, everyone's a loser here, that's for sure.
Yeah. They meet with a local detective who also agrees that it's a copycat and says that everybody knows the details of this case. It's wildly famous.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't be that hard to copycat it because everybody knows what happened. Morgan and Prentice go to the morgue where they learn that the women were bludgeoned during their abduction, which didn't happen with the butcher. He had enough finesse to get them to come with him without use of brute force.
Mm-hmm.
And then also that different knives were used during the torture.
Ugh.
So then we cut to a blonde girl. All these victims are blonde, by the way. Forgot to say that. And she sees a young man who she calls Colby getting groceries out of his van. She greets him, tells him that she got a job at Joe's Coffee and that he should come see her there sometime. Mm-hmm. And she's
bubbly
young,
and nice
and sweet
young.
And everything. Yeah. And he's
very awkward.
Awkward, but in a shy way, not
not in a
threatening,
scary way. Yeah.
And then an old man comes out of the house, starts yelling at him. about how he can't do anything right and like does the like almost punches him in the face but yeah. stops right before he hits him. And you're like, this old guy sucks.
Yeah. And the younger guy is like so much bigger than him but obviously afraid of the older guy.
Yeah.
And the Colby guy looked so familiar. He was in one episode of New Girl. That's where I know him from.
Oh.
I was like, why? Why does this guy look so familiar?
Yeah, he did look super familiar, but mm-hmm. I could not place where he was from.
He was in the episode of New Girl where, what's his name, the guy that is the snowman in Frozen?
Josh Gad.
Josh Gad was like the really weird guy that Jess wants to date the cute, tall guy, but yes. she accidentally gets set up on a date with Josh Gad. That's him. I was like, oh.
Yeah, because yeah. they're like the guys that deliver the beer yeah. to the bar, right?
Uh-huh.
The kegs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Interesting.
So, yeah, interesting. And then that was the point with Colby and the old man that I was like, oh, I do remember this.
Yeah. The old man is not easy to forget.
No. He was apparently on Hill Street Blues, which my mom loved that show. But he was on like 145 episodes of Hill Street Blues or something.
That's a lot of episodes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Hotch listens to the message.
Makes the parents listen to the message.
Jenny's distraught parents. This mom, from the first time we saw her till now, looks like she has aged 45 years.
Yes. She is so good.
Yeah.
And just weeping. Just yeah. weeping. I can't even say sobbing because it's like noiseless. You know, she's just... But she's
like, you can tell that like she just has not stopped crying since they found her daughter.
Yeah.
And then the dad also looks sad, but I don't even care because he's the worst.
Yeah. No.
Who's the real villain of this episode? Right,
seriously.
And Rossi and Reed talk to Kara's fiance, who I don't think we ever get his name. Hmm. He's not that important. But he actually talked to her. So they don't have a recording. They just have to like get in all the information from him.
Yeah.
So he says like what she said to him. Mm-hmm. And they were like, well, did she sound like herself? Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, it didn't strike me as weird. She sounded like herself considering the insane circumstances yeah. that she was in. And Reed says, were her lexical features consistent with her vernacular? I'm like, I get it, Reed. You're smart. And you're smart enough to know that the question you just asked, he's already just answered.
Right.
He just told you that.
Not only has he just answered it, but you know that you're phrasing it in a way that doesn't make sense to anyone but you.
Yeah. And the man looks at him and says, what?
Yeah. Uh-huh. As he should.
As he should. And Rossi is like, are the words hers? And he's like, yeah. I just told you that. That scene annoyed me so much.
As I just said.
Yes. Jenny's parents, however, say that it's really strange that Jenny would have said, I know you taught me never to be afraid, because mm-hmm. her mom is like, we never told her that.
Yeah.
Like, that is not something that? That's yeah. a very weird thing for her to say.
Mm-hmm.
Rossi asked the fiance if Kara said that she enjoyed it. He is obviously horrified. She did not say that.
Yeah.
And he asks what they're not telling him. Mm-hmm. Like, he knows something is up. And then he's gone and we never see the fiance again.
We never really talk about Kara again or Kara.
So Colby and the old man watch a slideshow of just locations. Mm-hmm. And the man is like telling him where it is. It's like, oh, it's this park. And then they get to a gas station and he says what intersection it's at. And Colby's like, no, it's not that one. And the old man gets really mad at him. Colby's like, no, it's okay if you don't remember. We'll keep practicing. And the man says that he knows a better way to practice and tells Colby he wants to go out. And Colby says it's not time, but the man is having none of it. And he's like, nope, we're going out.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
So, and then also, like, he says that, like, he's, like, when he's yelling at Colby, he's, like, telling him that, like, how much better his last caretaker was. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, he says, like, what do I pay you for and stuff. So you're not quite sure,
you're not sure what the relationship is between
the two of them. Mm-hmm. But like, obviously it has to be more than just
working for him
because he would never
put up with it.
Like, how much are they paying you that you're right. putting up with this man being just the worst mm-hmm. to you? So Morgan and Prentice check out the site where Jenny was abducted and deduce that it had to have been two unsubs because you need one to like lure her and one to grab her,
mm-hmm.
Which also explains the different knife marks on the body. They're like, mm-hmm. oh, he's not using two different knives. It's two different people using mm-hmm. different knives, which is awful.
Yeah.
Rossi and Reed listen to old tapes, one of which caught the unsub's very creepy voice.
Yeah, apparently he couldn't hear it on the original, but Rossi had them digitized and you could enhance it or something.
Which sounds fake to me, but when you're talking about old audio tapes from like 1982,
right.
Answering machine tapes. Like, I don't know. I don't know anything about audio engineering. Rossi says that he never wrote about him in any of his books because he had too much power and he needs to find him first. Mm-hmm. So they realize when they're listening to these tapes that the last victim from 1993, Susan Cole, left a message for her family that was exactly the same as Jenny's. Mm-hmm. Like, same wording about, like, you taught me never to be afraid or whatever.
Yeah.
So Prentice and Morgan also tell the rest of the crew when they return that they think they're looking for a team. Mm-hmm. So the old man approaches a blonde woman in a park, asks for help. He says, my caregiver just had a heart attack, and like takes her back to the car. She looks in the car. There's nobody there. And then the van door opens and Colby grabs her and puts her in the van. It's so fast.
Yeah, it's so fast.
It's very scary.
So they like use the empty car next to where the van is parked, which is smart. Then you're not even looking at the van.
Yeah.
And yeah, just he grabs her and I mean hits her really hard when he pulls her into the car.
So then she wakes up down in like this torture basement looking area.
Yeah.
And the old man takes his shirt off and he's got like the ratty undershirt and it's so creepy. And he tells her not to worry because they'll tell her exactly what to say.
Yeah. Oh, no.
So this woman, Heather, they find her body. And Rossi says it was dumped in the same spot as Susan Cole's and in the same position. Like the hand was like up above her head. Like same exact position. So he is even more convinced now that the actual butcher
is involved.
Had to have been involved in this in some way. He wants to wait to give the profile, even though Hodge thinks that they're ready. Mm-hmm. And no one listens to Rossi about that.
Nope.
And they give the profile anyway. And I don't know if you wrote it down because we don't really hear any of it.
I did, but we don't really. I wrote down what there is, but we don't really hear any of it. I also want to point out that they've had 3 bodies in 1 week and it's been, 30 years since this last kill. And he wasn't killing 3 people a week 30 years ago.
No, he's killing 2 people a year.
So 3 in a week.
What an escalation. Sometimes tend to escalate and devolve.
I don't know.
The FBI is closing in on them sometimes.
I feel like that's not a thing that they ever say. So
it's a rare occurrence.
So here's all we get. These unsubs, or unknown subjects, are considerably organized. They most likely have some sort of secondary location they use to torture the victims. Their skill level is evidenced by the high-risk public nature of their abductions. They're able to lure their intended victims with some kind of a ruse. They then blitz them with overwhelming force. And at this point, the profile delivery, which you can hear that they are still speaking, but you can't hear what they're saying, is drowned out by Rossi's recollection of the last butcher victim Susan's phone call, which we're hearing again.
Yeah.
I can now recite this phone call. We've heard it so many times already.
Yeah.
We're only halfway through the episode.
But they said, like, they have a secondary location. Mm-hmm. You're like, you don't even know enough of these people to know what the primary location is. What's the primary? The van that they're in? The abduction site? How do you know it's not their house in their basement? You don't. You don't know anything about these people.
No, but they definitely know there's 2 locations.
I just wanted one of the cops to be like, what's the primary location?
I know. Because anytime the local cops, like, pipe in, it's never for anything useful or helpful. You know? It's not an actual legitimate question that they should have upon hearing this. Because a local cop does, like, try to ask Rossi a question.
Yeah, he says, has the butcher resurfaced?
Yeah, and Ross is, like, all spaced out because he's still thinking about Susan.
And Hodge just interrupts and he's like, no, it's a copycat.
Yeah.
So the old man tells Colby that he's never been so helpful. And Colby's like, yes, I am. I'm very helpful all the time. Remember that one time when I was 10 and there was the lady in the hallway? And the dad's like, or the old man's like, no, I don't know. And like, clearly, since he's known him forever, it's got to be like a dad or an uncle or some
and I was
family
member.
No,
he grew up in the house with this man doing these things.
But he totally denies that ever happened.
Yeah.
And Colby's like, no, I remember. Yeah. He's like, anyway.
So it's obvious that this man is like struggling with dementia.
Yeah.
The older guy. Like the house is very messy and disorganized.
And like at this point, I think this is when Colby's like making labels to put on things. Stuff. Yeah. Like while the old man's just yelling at him.
Eating his oatmeal.
Yeah. Ugh. Gross. So Colby goes through possible potential victims. And the old guy's like, hey, what about that blonde girl you were talking to the other day? And Colby's like, our neighbor, Anna? That seems like a bad idea. It's a little bit too close. Choose someone else. So he looks through the photos and like two of the women have brown hair with highlights and one of them is blonde. And shockingly, he picks the blonde one.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Who works at a pharmacy, I guess. Pharmacy.
But she doesn't.
We'll get there. It's very confusing. Yeah. Hotch tells Rossi that he knows that he's not convinced about the whole copycat thing. And Rossi tells Hotch that sometimes psychopathology changes. He gives the examples that Bundy stopped using the broken arm ruse and that Dahmer didn't eat all of his victims. Mm-hmm. Like, I would argue that eating the victim was the change in psychopathology because he only did that one time.
Look, that's not why we're here, Emily. We're not here for truth. We're just dropping names.
Yeah. So Hotch, in any case, tells him to keep on the butcher theory. Mm-hmm. Like, keep working it as if the butcher is involved. And yeah. We'll keep working it as in...
Which is so unusual. I feel like Hotch does not usually relent in that way.
If it was anybody else, he would have told him to knock it off.
That's true. It's probably because it's Rossi. Yeah, that's very true.
And he trusts Rossi. And you know what I noticed in this that I really like that humanizes Hotch a little bit? Mm. He always calls Rossi Dave.
Yeah, that's true. That's a very good point.
Like, always.
Yeah. And you know what? I feel like is it because, like, Rossi is older and more experienced and, like, has such a storied career? Like, Hotch admires his work. And so even though Hotch is the boss, he... you know, does those kinds of things.
I don't know. Or just like feels closer to him or something. But I do like that it's always Dave.
Yeah.
It softens him just a bit.
Yeah, it does.
Because like Rossi and JJ are the only two people he doesn't call by their last names.
That's right. Yeah he doesn't. But nobody calls because.
Nobody calls anybody else. But everybody else calls Rossi, Rossi.
Right.
They don't call him Dave.
Yeah.
But nobody called JJ anything else.
Right.
That's because it's her first and last name together.
Right, exactly.
So the old man and Colby go to the pharmacy where they sell jewelry, clothing, and the blonde girl is a sales girl selling knives, like a Cutco salesperson.
Yeah, but it's like she has her kit that she brings with her and unpacks and takes with her when she goes.
At the pharmacy. Where you buy knives.
Knives and necklaces. Jewelry. Yeah.
Yeah. But they're like watching him and the old man's like, I love her hands.
Yeah,
she has pretty hands.
He's like, ew.
And he's just like staring and smiling a little bit. And he's so creepy. He's so good in this role.
Him smiling is one of the most off-putting things in this entire episode.
It really is. So then Rossi, we get some like dramatic music.
Everybody's sitting around brainstorming.
Yes. Rossi's going over old case files.
Staring plaintively out the window.
Prentice and Reed are dramatically compiling a list of possible duos.
Uh-huh. Did you write down the list?
I did.
Okay, good.
So Reed starts with husband and wife and Morgan shakes his head and then he adds father and son. And then Prentice walks over and very dramatically writes, brothers, underneath. And I'm like, what about racquetball partners?
Yeah.
Ice skating pairs? One half of a barbershop quartet? An old priest and a young priest? And also, there are no same-sex romantic pairings that I noticed.
No, that's true.
Like, it could be two men who are both sadists. It would be more likely than a husband and wife team, I feel like.
Yeah.
Because women sadists aren't that common.
No.
Well, it's weird that husband and wife was the first one he came up with.
Yeah. I would think brothers or father and son, right? Yeah. Would be right there at the top.
Yeah.
Childhood best friends. Co-workers.
Well, it's got to be somebody
older and younger.
Not necessarily. Because they're working at like their copycats.
Right, right. There were.
We
the
know
cop-
that it's not. Yeah, but, yeah. So, the police office, which by the way is painted a very nice shade of green.
It is
pretty hunter green.
Very calming.
I'm like, yeah. Like, oh, I really like this.
Been looking at greens from my kitchen. I am really into the green.
Colby and the old man very efficiently kidnap the sales girl.
Yeah,
like. It drives up. She's loading up the trunk. Mm-hmm. The van just pulls up behind her. Door opens. Colby grabs her. I assume it's Colby because the old guy's got to be driving. And then pulls away. It's like 4 seconds.
Yeah, not even. It's crazy. And those are the kinds of places you think you're safe because there's lots of people around. But nobody would know. Like you would have to
She didn't make a sound.
No, she didn't have time to react. It's insane.
Yeah.
And terrifying.
So Rossi decides that it has to be a father and son and says that the butcher created and groomed the perfect partner that he would have complete control over and would have total trust in him.
Yeah.
The detective announces that they did find a voicemail from Heather, the last girl, because they thought it was weird that she didn't make a phone call. Mm-hmm. But apparently she had called her father's work.
Yeah.
Assuming that he would be there.
Mm-hmm.
And the secretary just got the message. But in her message, she ends it by saying that she enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And they're like, ah, it's the signature. The signature. Rossi's vindicated.
Yes.
So the blonde girl that they kidnapped won't say what he wants her to say when they're like electrocuting her.
Yeah.
I'm like, ugh, this is, we watched Deadpool last night and there's the one part where, they're like threatening, what is it, TJ Miller's character or whatever. Yeah. And he's like, I won't tell you anything. And then they like threaten him and he's like, all right, here's what you need to know.
Yeah, that would be me.
The information.
Like, you wouldn't even have to shock me.
No, you could just like,
hold it up and be like, okay.
You wouldn't even have to do that. Just strap me down to the thing and I would immediately be like, don't hurt me. I'll tell you anything. What do you want me to say?
Yes, 100%.
I'd be like, we were actually not going to hurt you. I'd be like, oh, well, still, this is very threatening.
It's so gruesome.
Yeah, but the old man, like, gets he's really frustrated.
Yeah.
He starts yelling at Colby that none of this would have happened if he would have just brought him Annie in the first place. Mm-hmm. He says that Colby can't get anything right and says, I'll show you how to kill, and then pulls out, like, this cartoonishly large, like, hunting knife and just stabs her while she's writhing.
So many times,
awful.
And she's screaming. She's strapped down.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
And then you're just like, where are they?
Yeah.
No one is hearing this.
Yeah. Yeah, it is apparently
a remote secondary location.
Yes. Not the basement of their house.
Yeah. So the old man watches Colby digging a hole in the backyard. He comes out and he's like, what are you doing? Colby's like, what the fuck do you think I'm doing?
Yeah.
I'm like, but I don't know why they're burying this.
Right. And we'll come back to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a lot more to say about this once we learn more information.
So he tells Colby that he's hungry and that he wants to go hunt. And Colby's like, no, we need to lay low. Maybe that's why they're burying the body, because they need to lay low. And there's cops. He says
everywhere.
There's cops all over the neighborhood.
Yeah.
The old man says that they need to go hunting because they haven't hunted in 3 weeks. And Colby's like, we literally killed this girl yesterday.
Yeah.
Look at her body is right here. And the old man doesn't remember killing her.
No.
And he's like really distressed when he sees the condition of the body, because he's like, this is sloppy work. I wouldn't do this.
Yeah.
And he says if he's doing work like that, then Colby should just kill him.
And he's like, right.
Colby.
Go ahead, Colby.
Yeah, he gave you the go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So looking at past victims, we learned that Sylvia, the first girl that he killed, didn't make a phone call.
Mm-hmm.
They decide that that's because he just hadn't thought of that aspect yet.
Yeah.
Then the next 6 women make calls, but not the 8th victim, Karen.
Mm-hmm.
Karen and her husband, Lee Mullins, had a son named Colby, who was born 2 years before they got married. And they're like, well, this husband, like, she must not have made a phone call because he was the most important person. Like, the most important people in her life were already there. So clearly this man and his son must be the butcher and his partner. And you're like, what?
It went so quickly, too. Like, The line to follow is very tangled when they have this conversation, because at first I was like, wait. Because obviously as soon as they realize she didn't make a phone call, I was like, okay, so.
But they, and also they don't know, because Rossi's like, well, I just assumed they didn't get a hold of somebody. So they don't know that she didn't make a phone call.
Right.
We just know that no one got a phone call.
Right. But. I was like, so did the butcher kill Karen and kidnap Karen's son? Or are they, who was only two at the time, or are they saying?
Because they say that her husband is also the father that signed the birth certificate. So they
Right. So I was just very confused for a moment because there's
It was very confusing.
A lot of information. I'm like, okay,
because
so.
They do this when they know that the path they've gotten from this is weird to we have a suspect doesn't make any sense. Yeah. They go really, really fast. So you don't have time to think about how dumb it is because none of this makes any sense at all.
No, no, it does not. Yeah. It's too much. But anyway, here we are.
Yeah. Colby and Lee, it turns out, live a few blocks or a few miles from the dump site. Mm-hmm. And they are electricians. And then they're like, oh, only an electrician could do this. And you're like, I think.
I'd be most likely to electrocute someone because I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah, exactly. This is why anytime, one time I had to change just the outlet plate thing. Mm-hmm. And I turned off all the power to my house just in case before I did that.
Yeah, that's what I would do
too. My dad is like, that seems unnecessary. And I'm like, just in case. So Colby tells his dad that he'll go out hunting for him and bring back someone he'll really like. And he's like talking to him through the door because Lee's mad at
him. He's pouting.
Yeah. And Lee smiles and Colby slips a note under the door telling him where he's going, which is weird.
It's very
just
weird.
Just say it. What? Anyway, Colby heads to the coffee shop to see Anna just as the FBI shows up at Lee's house.
It's a really big house.
Yeah.
I didn't notice the first time we saw it how huge it is, but it's gigantic. Yeah.
Lee is like digging through all of Colby's things and he finds a photo of Anna in a book. So clearly he hid it because he actually likes her and doesn't want to hurt her. Mm-hmm. The team swoops in, they arrest Lee who pees his pants much to Rossi's disgust.
Yeah. Rossi is disgusted.
Not happy.
Cause he's ready to take down the butcher finally. And then it's just this old man.
Sad, pathetic old man.
Yeah.
So there's no torture chamber anywhere in the house. So Hotch tells Garcia to look through property records to find any other properties that they might own. Mm-hmm. Colby comes home, but spots the cop cars and leaves.
Naturally.
Yeah. Reed notes that there are labels on everything, and he found a set of flashcards and finds Alzheimer's medication in the cabinet. And Morgan finds the slides, which he says are all of the abduction sites. Mm-hmm. So, we saw them looking at the slides earlier.
Yeah.
We didn't know if they were, abduction sites or dump sites or whatever. So, but obviously, weirdly specific places.
Yeah, something related to the crime, for sure.
Rossi sits down to talk to Lee, who tells him that they met when Karen was murdered. Mm-hmm. He says, you played the part of the grieving husband. And Lee's like, I don't know what you're talking about.
And he does seem to be playing way more feeble-minded than before.
Than we've seen him. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
Which may be it's a very disorienting situation to be in. So if you had dementia, maybe it would be made worse. But it's hard to tell if he's just putting on an act for the FBI or not.
Yeah. Lee tells Rossi that he's scared, and Rossi says he doesn't have the right to feel scared. Mm. So we see Colby strap Anna down while she begs for her life, but he seems super stressed about the prospect of having to kill her and doesn't seem to know
what to do
at all. Cause he's like, well, I'm not going to kill her cause I don't want to and I can't let her go. Mm-hmm. So he's just going to
he's going to figure something out. Yep.
They talk to Lee some more, and then finally they say something that clearly strikes a memory, and he gets really sinister, and he says something about with Sylvia, her eyes got so big when she saw the Lexwell that it almost scared me or something. Mm-hmm. I just find out what that is.
Yeah. Which is exactly what I would be saying in that situation.
He's like, somebody Google this. What's a Lexwell? So Garcia tells them that Lexwell is a company that makes cameras, used to make cameras, but before that, they made electroshock therapy equipment and also finds an abandoned mental institution where Colby and his father had done some wiring work and it used to be four buildings and now two of them are abandoned and they only use two of them. So they assume that must be the location.
So this was where I was so you're telling me They abducted Heather, took her to the abandoned mental institution.
The secondary location.
Then drove her back to the primary location and buried her in their own backyard.
Yeah.
Okie dokie.
Yeah, it seems like it would have been easier to just dump her
somewhere.
But
you're going to drive her? I mean, how do you even get her in the backyard? It apparently is a very private backyard.
They have like a 12-foot privacy fence.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's in a neighborhood.
But he just parks on the street. When we see him earlier getting the groceries, they don't even have a driveway. He just parks on the street.
Yeah.
This seems like a lot of extra work to get Heather into the backyard.
It does.
You already had her.
Especially when you have buried no bodies up until this point. Right. You killed like 25 people and mm-hmm. none of them have been buried. They've right. all just been dumped somewhere.
If you were going to bury them, why wouldn't you bury them outside the abandoned building nobody goes to?
Or just stop dumping the bodies on the street
yeah.
that you live on. Because
mm-hmm.
they're all of these people are like abducted and dumped right along the same main road mm-hmm. that goes through this town.
Yeah.
Go to the next town. I don't know.
Just a thought. Just something to think about.
Nobody said these. No, I was going to say nobody said these were smart men, but they did. They said they're very organized.
They say it a lot of times, actually.
Yeah. So they find Colby and Anna. Colby has a knife to Anna's neck.
Mm-hmm.
And they tell Colby that Lee killed his mother, and Colby's like, no, my mom left. She mm-hmm. went to go live with her sister in Boston. And they were like, no, your mom found out what your dad was doing, and then he killed her, and you would have been about 10. And he's like, oh, no. And realizes that, like, he helped
mm-hmm.
his dad kill his mom.
Yeah.
And you're like, this poor kid.
Like, I know. It's absolutely sickening. Like,
yeah.
It's hard to watch.
And he remembers himself, like, curled in the corner, like, next to the sink, like, crying while his mom tells him that she loves him and none of this is his fault yeah. and all of this stuff.
Oh, my God. Poor Colby.
And then he, like, drops the knife or, like, you know, he doesn't drop it, but takes it away from Anna's neck and then goes and curls up in the exact same spot
yes.
and starts crying. And I was like, that was a good choice mm-hmm. of, like, you know, cinematic choice
yeah.
there. But it's really sad. Mm-hmm. And Hutch helps Anna up and gives her a big hug.
Hutch hugs the victim.
Yeah.
It's huge.
And then I was like, is he hugging her or was he just helping her, like, support her? And she was like, yes, I'll go in for a hug.
He was I can like, really use a hug right now.
Why are you squeezing my body? So then back at the police station, Morgan gets a text from Ellie and Prentice is like, oh, don't you think that maybe this relationship is getting to be a little bit inappropriate and maybe Ellie should get some help from a professional instead of texting you every morning and every night mm-hmm. and many times throughout the day? And Morgan's like, no. I'm like, Morgan has a victim thing.
He does. Like, mm-hmm.
Not that I'm
not in a sexual
like,
way.
Yeah, with this little girl. He just gets way too attached mm-hmm. to the people.
He gets too involved post case yes. with the victims. It happens all the time.
So Lee tells Rossi as they're walking out that he does remember him and that he's the reason that he stopped killing. So then we get our next quote. Mark Twain wrote, "When I was younger, I could remember anything, whether it had happened or not. But my faculties are decaying now, and soon I shall be so I cannot remember anything but the things that never happened. It's sad to go to pieces like this, but we all have to do it." And then we see that Lee tries to kill himself in prison,
mm-hmm.
but is unsuccessful and is just a sad, pathetic old man
mm-hmm.
in a wheelchair.
Rossi's typing away.
And Rossi is broken through his writer's block. He's just tapping away at
writing
that
about
keyboard.
The butcher, I would assume, all in one sitting, probably.
Yep.
And there you have it.
Yeah.
I do not feel that this is a profile worth scoring.
There's nothing.
They might as well have not given us one.
No.
They explained to us what unsub means, and that's about it.
That there were two of them, mm-hmm. and that they probably had a secondary location.
And we knew all that even before they started giving us the profile, so.
Yeah. And then everything else that would have been relevant profile information was just drowned out because they clearly didn't want to write a profile.
Yeah. It's a genius move, really.
Yeah.
We've got two more white men. I counted this as two.
Yeah.
So 100% white men in season 6.
Nice.
4-0. Overall, 111 white men to 23 knot, leaving us at, you guessed it, 83% white men.
Excellent.
Someday when it either goes down or up by just 1%, like when we're in like season 13, it's going to be mind-blowing to all of us. But for the next several years, 83% white men, I would imagine.
That's what we got.
Would you do anything for Hotch Watch? He's got a perfect score already.
I mean, leave him.
He was.
He can't get higher than a 10.
No, he was doing great work in this one.
Yeah.
A good, empathetic, understanding boss. Hugged the victim. What more can you ask for? Go home and hug your kid next, Hotch. That's all I ask.
Nope, we're still not discussing Jack's existence.
The next episode is Compromising Positions.
This is the Akron episode.
Yes. So be prepared for a geography lesson, everyone. Emily's going to have a lot to say.
Maybe they'll just be really good at Akron geography.
For the first time ever, yeah. They'll have Googled the place where the episode is taking place.
I know. I'm just looking at the keywords to see if I remember anything. None of these are good.
I don't remember this one. I look forward to remembering it as I watch.
Yeah.
Well, wherever you're listening, be sure to leave a 5-star review. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok at The Unsub Is A White Man. You can find our merch on Redbubble. If you buy anything, make sure you tag us. We'll share you to our stories. Our theme music is composed and performed by Nate Youngblood, and the podcast is produced by Nate Youngblood. Thanks, Nate.
And until next week, we'll be adding to our list of things we do in Paris.